Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap with Mr. Iceman John Scully and a little straight talk with Ronnie Shields. Right now, we're going to try to get Mr. Iceman Scully on the phone right now, and let's get this show on the road. Let's see what's going on here.
Six, 0, 2, 2, 1, 5, 9, 8, 7 is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you
let's see what's up here with Scully. I know he's running around down there in Florida. Probably got his phone on charge. Let's see.
Two, two, one, five, nine.
Well, let's see if we can get him on our other line here. Got a lot of upcoming events down there in Florida. Maybe John is taking care of a little business. We have Bounce TV on the 30th in Orlando. And then I believe it's on, November 7th, NBC Sports out of Miami. So there's a lot of boxing taking place down there in Florida. We also have October 31st at Kissimmee, Florida. So we have a lot of things coming up down there in the Sunshine State. Let's see what's going on with Mr. Scully here.
Hello?
Good evening, Mr. John. How you doing tonight, my man?
Everything's good, man. Everything's all right. Just my phone was dead. I'm actually just turned back on a second ago.
I've kind of figured that's what it was all about. But, hey, as I was telling the audience, man, we have some cards coming up down there in Florida starting this weekend all the way up until November 7th. Are you going to be a part of any of those festivities down there in Florida?
Actually, the fight this coming weekend, I had a boxer on the show, but they actually took him off the show and put him on a show in Miami Beach the following week. So I'm actually happy about that. I like Miami Beach quite a bit, so I'll be down there the following week. But actually, a guy from my gym who's 10-0 welterweight by the name of Miguel Cruz, really, really good fighter, very, very a hot prospect in my eyes. I believe he's a hot prospect, and he's fighting on the show in Orlando this coming weekend.
And who's your fighter on the show November 7th? Is that the date you're talking about, November 7th, NBC Sports?
Right. Yeah, it's a kid by the name of Bruno Bedician. He's a Romanian kid, 1-0. Actually, he turned pro on the Keith Thurman Louis Collazo show, and I was going for a second pro fight, and good fighter, really, really talented kid, and so I'm actually looking forward to him putting on a really good show.
Yeah, like I said, it seems like there's a lot of things, a lot of good things happening in Florida within the next couple of weeks. We're going to see some young prospects, as long as along with some of the veterans such as Tony Thomas and Malik Scott. But we also have some young names in there. Antonio Tarver Jr. is putting on another four rounder. James McGurk Jr. is also part of that card. John, how are things down there in Florida? I mean, you know, we always hear about, you know, Philly and Las Vegas and out here or down in Texas. How is boxing doing, you know, in Florida as far as performances? Are you getting more cards down there? You know, more people getting a little more recognition since we started this PBC series?
Yeah. There's actually been fighters from here who have been on the shows, and I noticed there's a lot of gyms around here. There's a lot of action, a lot of sparring, and actually, on a sad note, the kid who got hurt the other day, Pritchard, on the PBC show, he was actually at my gym. He was down here sparring. He was actually sparring with Miguel Cruz, who I mentioned earlier. He was a really good kid. He is a good kid, and so everybody down here is really, really concerned for him because he was in our gym literally just 2 weeks ago, less than 2 weeks ago, sparring and working out. And so, you know, we've been attracting different guys from different areas. There's actually a kid by the name of Javante Starks, who signed with Al Haymon. He's from Minnesota, but he comes down here because his brother lives in Orlando, so he comes and spars at my gym. I just saw him there yesterday, as a matter of fact, and I believe he's on the show as well.
I believe we've had him on our show. I'm not exactly sure. The name sounds very familiar. I know that we have heard of him, and we're looking for big things in his career as he goes along. John, let's talk about some of the previous fights here. We saw HBO, they showed all the fights. We didn't get a chance to talk to you about it last week, but along with the Crawford fight, they also showed the Gennady Golovkin fight, along with the Chocolatito fight. John, let's start with the Chocolatito fight. We've all become pretty accustomed to Brian Valoria. We know he's a really tough kid. He's been in with some of the best. Were you surprised with the way that he was handled by Chocolatito?
To tell you the truth, not particularly. And I tell you why. As good of a fighter as Brian is, I mean, Brian was a great amateur, great professional. But and it's sad in a way, but it's just the way boxing is. It's been that way through history, and it's going to stay that way. You know, you get the guy on the way up, and he basically devours the guy who was in his position 10 or 12 years earlier. You know, there was a time when Brian Valoria was a monster, you know, a great fighter, just a very capable fighter. And, but, you know, he's at that age, and he's at that point in his career and his life where, you know, they basically feed these guys to the next generation. And that's part of how they make their name. You know what I mean? It's almost like they fight the fight to gain that name. You know, they want that name on their record to bring them closer to the mainstream. So it's, you know, it's sad in a way, but it's just, it's almost like the food chain of life, in boxing exhibits that. It's just the way it is. And, so, you know, I accept it, but I don't really, like it all that much.
Yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from. I think, you know, I kind of have my only problem with this is, I mean, I don't really see anyone right now in that particular weight class that's really going to give this guy a lot of trouble I mean, it'll make for some entertaining fights, but I don't know if it'll add to his repertoire or, as you say, you know, just kind of keep him in the spotlight until the next up-and-comer. John, what impresses you most about Chocolatito? Is it his punching power at such a lighter weight? Or is, you know, as they were mentioning, his footwork, his incredible footwork, which one more impresses you, his footwork or his power? Or do you think that his footwork generates his power?
I mean, it certainly helps. He's able to set his shots up. You know, people think, like, punchy power is just you throw a punch and you land it and the power, you know, rears its head. But the fact is, you know, the placement of the punch and the timing of the punch is more important than the actual physical power. You know, if you're a good puncher, you can become an exceptional puncher with great results if you know when to punch and where to punch and how to punch at the right time. And I think that's probably his biggest gift. You know, it's footwork that sets it up. Similar to Lomachenko, you know, those two guys combined, I mean, the best, you know, they're in contests to see who has the best footwork. So that's my take on the situation. He's a good puncher, but again, is, you know, setting the punches up is probably the more impressive thing for me as a trainer.
Let's talk about the other half of that card, because it seems right now, John, that they're going to be linked as a pay-per-view package, and I'm talking about Triple G. This is the second bout that Chocolatito has been part of the undercard for Triple G, so we can imagine that you know, they're going to put them you know, together as a final package. John, they garnered 150,000 pay-per-views for this particular fight. Do you consider that success?
No, you know, and there's been some dispute. I've seen some names, some people in boxing who dispute that, who find that hard to believe. And, you know, and I'll be honest, like I don't know necessarily how they tabulate it or why they would, you know, misinform or whatever, but that seems like an awfully low number for a fight like that. I'm actually, you know, I'm questioning if that's entirely accurate. That's a very, very low number. I'm very surprised. But I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe we're spoiled because we're used to those Mayweather and Canelo type of numbers. And now when we get something lesser, it just doesn't seem to add up.
Yeah, when I saw those numbers, I mean, people were counting it as a success, and I'm saying, you know, really, 150,000, you know, just a little over 150,000. I mean, you know, it just didn't seem to live up to the hype. You know, while we're talking about it now, what was your overall view of the Triple G Lemieux fight? Did you see anything different out of Triple G? What did you think about David Lemieux's performance?
I mean, you know, David gave it the try that we all knew he would. But I think Triple G has elevated his game to a certain degree. And I think his jab was exceptional. His demeanor was exceptional. And his punch placement, as usual, was exceptional. But his jab, you know, was to me a clinic on how and, you know, the timing of the jab and why you jab, how you offset a power puncher as he did. You know, very, very good performance. And I see, you know, I talk to a lot of guys in boxing, and I've seen some even some former champions, and they're saying, you know, they're not impressed with Triple G. They don't believe in it. You know, they say he's fighting nobodies. And, you know, I think that's very disrespectful. I mean, I certainly don't consider David and Curtis Stevens as nobodies. I mean, these guys are very capable. You know, they may not be Sugar Ray Leonard, but there are no Sugar Ray Leonards there right now. But Triple G, I mean, he's not having tough fights. He's not having close fights. you know, he's not really being pushed. You know, he's not in danger. And I believe that it's a testament to his ability more than a lack of competition. I think he's taken some very decent and good fighters, and I think he's ran right over them.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, to me, that's I'm kind of with you, John. I mean, it's kind of disrespectful to the fighter. He's fighting, you know, everyone that you put in front of him, regardless of, you know, name or whatever. But, you know, if this is the best competition that you have and you face it and you beat him, I think you deserve a lot of credit.
Sure.
John, just staying with Triple G. Now, you know, Triple G has said that he wants the winner of Cotto and Cano. And, of course, you know, as soon as Cotto hears that, the first thing he says is, I'm not a middleweight. But yet he holds a middleweight belt. Canelo says right. he'll fight Triple G, but at 155. John, if you're a champion and you want to be the best, what's with all these damn catch weights?
You know, I was never a world champion, you know, so it may sound funny to some, but I'm losing more and more respect for Miguel Cotto as the days pass. I mean, for him to say these things, it just shows like it's almost insanity. It's almost like pure ignorance. I mean, or a lack of respect for the history of boxing. You know, you're a middleweight. You're the middleweight champion. You're supposedly the lineal champion, and I just cannot fathom the mentality it takes of this era of boxers where they would say, I want to catch weight. I mean, it's up to the sanctioning bodies to show some balls and step in and say, listen, like I wish I was the head of the WBC, and I would say, listen, Miguel, be quiet, man. Just be quiet. Just fight the fight or give up the belt. There's no catch weight. There's no such thing as the 157-pound class. And if you don't want to fight, then give it up. And I promise you, I would do that. I would do that as sure as I'm sitting here. I mean, it's gotten to be just ridiculous, and I hate it. And I think, you know, a guy like Miguel Cotto has a lot of nerves. You know, they're damaging boxing. I believe they're damaging boxing by doing this and asking for this repeatedly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and then the usually what even makes it, you know, that insult to injury, then they don't make the catch weight. But
right,
I mean, you know, so you know, it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, you know, but. I've never, you know, really, I mean, you know, when back in the day, you know, when you fought Marvin Hagler came in, he was a middleweight champ, you fought him at middleweight. Marvin Hagler didn't come in and say, well, you know, maybe we can fight this at 152, you know, or maybe we can fight, you know, I mean, you know, it was, I kind of agree with you that it's a lack of respect for the game, you know, for the sport itself. But John, do you see any solutions to it? Since, you know,
the solution is to tell these guys to go kick rock. That's the solution. You're the middleweight champion. You defend the middleweight title. That's it. Like, there's no, you know, that's like in baseball, you know, in basketball. If they didn't have a bunch of tall guys on the Bucks, and they said, look, for this game, we're going to have a 9-foot goal because none of our guys can dunk. I mean, it's that level of stupidity, I believe.
But now, let's take it the other way, John. You know, how can you declare somebody, I mean, you know, how can you fight for a championship belt when in some organizations you have 5 or 6 belts in the same weight class? So how can you demand that a guy comes in at a certain weight? And you got an interim champ, you got a silver champ, you got a diamond champ, you got a 10 champ. I mean, you know, to me, it's hypocrisy on both ends.
It's hard to explain to people who don't know boxing. And they, like, if a guy walks up to me on the street and says, hey, Man, I'm just curious, like, who's the middleweight champion right now? Who's the dream middleweight champion? No, how do I explain to him that there's two WBA champions and there's a regular you know, I'll tell you how crazy it is. I might have mentioned this to you before on the air, but here's how insane it actually is. You know, I'm in the boxing game. You know what I mean? I'm in it. I'm here, right? I've been here for years. I have no idea, and I'm talking no idea, what the silver champion is. I have no idea. If you ask me, tell me what the silver champion is, or I'm going to chop your foot off. Well, you're going to have to call me Lefty for the rest of my life because I couldn't tell you. Like, I literally have no idea. How crazy is that? I'm in the game, and I don't even know what it means. I couldn't begin to explain it to somebody. I have no clue what that means, what the silver champion is. But apparently people are holding the belt, and they are the silver, and they're defending it, and I don't even know what it means. It's just bizarre to me. You know, it's gotten more, it's just dumber and dumber as we go, and people accept it. You know, I saw a comedian one time, and he was saying how you ever go to a house and somebody's got roaches and they're eating at the table and there's a roach crawling on the wall and nobody says anything. You know, nobody, and the kid's like looking around. He's like, what's the matter with you people? There are roaches on the wall, but nobody says anything. You know, and nobody wants to be the one to point it out. And it's like, we have this situation in boxing that's so stupid, it's almost unfathomable. And nobody's saying anything. You know, it's just nobody, they just go, yeah, okay, yeah, we're going to sanction that. Here you go. Here's the silver champion. Here's the regular champion. Here's this guy, that guy. And nobody knows what it means. And nobody's stopping to ask. It's just bizarre to me. I amuse myself sometimes by saying to myself, I say, wow, I don't even know what the silver champion is. I don't even know if that means you're the world champion or you're like a special guy, or I don't know what it means. I mean, do you know? I mean, do you know what is the silver champion? Is that the champion, or what does it mean?
I've been saying all
along. So you don't know, either, basically.
I have no clue. I mean, when I'm...
Right,
you know, when
that's crazy.
when I was coming up, you know, we had a middleweight champ, we had a light heavyweight champ, we had a heavyweight. I mean, you know, we had champs in the weight class. I mean, you know, you never seen Muhammad Ali, you know, decide, well, you know, maybe I want to, you know, I want to be the WBO, you know, silver anniversary champ. I mean, you know, there wasn't anything else around.
You know what it is? When I always say, when I was a kid, I used to sit on my, I used to kneel on my father's bed every weekend, and I would fight fights every weekend. I had the gloves, I had everything, I had the timer, I would keep scorecard. I would fight for 3 minutes, 15 rounds, and I would score the fight, and you know, I'd do the whole thing. Never, ever, ever, ever did I fight for anything but the Undisputed Championship of the World. I never fought for a regular title, interim title, you know, just like I wouldn't even. I'll tell you right now, if boxing was like it is now, back then, I don't think I'd be sitting there talking to you. I don't think I wouldn't have had dreams, because no young kid 15 years old right now is sitting there going, man, one day I want to be the super champion. You know, I want to be the regular champion. Nobody's saying that. And they're killing dreams. They're killing the history and the future. They're a disease to the sport. You know, somebody needs to, like I say, it's like roaches on the wall. Nobody's saying anything. Everybody's just keeping quiet. And you know, I don't know why.
And what's more is, you know, these organizations are getting away with charging sanctioning fees for these interim, bogus, whatever kind of titles you want to call them, but, you know, they are getting paid. And, I mean, you know, I think, you know, we do enough to boxers now. Why are we trying to find more ways to rob them? And basically, to me, that's exactly what it is. It's robbery. I mean, you know, the belt means little or nothing, but they want to put a fee on it. And, you know,
right.
It's a very financially, I think boxing, even though we know the sport is in good shape, I think right now financially, it's just a sad state of affairs. Like I said, the way that we're trying to do more to get more money out of the boxers instead of, maybe having some insurance or something that is for the benefit of the fighter instead of just the organization. John, let's talk about some of the fights coming up here. We got some good ones coming up. And the first one that I wanted to kind of talk about here, Jermell Charlo against Hakeem Olajuwon. This is a 10-round middleweight. We know that Jamal is now a champion. John, what do you think about the younger brother, the younger twin, Jermell?
To tell you the truth, I really haven't seen that much of him. Not enough. I've heard good things. I hear, I hear he's definitely a big time prospect, but I can't honestly say I have not really seen him fight up close.
Yeah, he doesn't quite get as much press and pub as Jamal, but he's a very good fighter. Of course, he's no longer with Ronnie, so this is going to be his first fight without being under Plex and Ronnie Shields. So it should be interesting to see exactly how he handles himself coming off with a new trainer and a new regime. But November 7th, and we've already heard some of the rumblings. Brandon Rios is saying, that he's going to make Timothy Bradley fight his fight and not let Timothy Bradley take the lead. What do you think about that fight, Brandon Rios and Timothy Bradley? 12 rounds, Las Vegas, November 7th.
Very good fight. I think it's going to be – I think Brandon's probably at, numerous times in the fight is going to get Timothy into a rumble. I think Timothy will oblige him. I think it's going to be a good fight. But I think Timothy, one thing I'll say, a lot of people are questioning it, but I know he's got Teddy Atlas in his corner now. And now in terms of long term, I don't know how that's going to work. But I will say this. Teddy knows, and any trainer knows, I guess, but, Teddy certainly will push it, in terms of, how Timothy needs to beat Brandon Rios. It's not a major mystery. And I think if Timothy is showing in the gym at all that he's veering away from that plan, I think he's getting his butt chewed out quite harshly. So in that regard, I think Teddy Atlas is a good fit because Teddy's going to drill into him what he needs to do to win this fight.
And on that same card, Vasily Lomachenko is coming back in. He's defending his featherweight title. John, with all of Lomachenko's amateur background and with what that he's shown so far, winning the title on in his second pro professional fight, is Lomachenko, should he also be in this? If we're going to throw Chocolatito and Terrence Crawford and all these other guys in the pound for pound, what about Lomachenko?
Oh yeah, it's kind of bizarre and it's kind of crazy for me of all people to put him in there because I'm the type you've got to earn your way up and you've got to get seasoned as a professional and I always tell people you just can't become a pro and expect to excel at it it's a learning process, but this guy he's a with his footwork especially and his combinations and obviously his amateur background has served him well. He's certainly, in terms of skill, he's a guy, I think a young guy would watch him and say, I want to fight like that. I want to fight like that. That guy's doing things I want to do. So, I don't say that about too many people with less than 10 fights, but he impresses me. He's very impressive. He's got a lot of skill, a lot of talent.
Yes, sir. And he, like you said, I know it does take a lot to impress you. That's one of the reasons why I was asking your opinion, because you've always, since we started talking about him, regarded this guy, a little notch above the rest, even though he didn't quite meet your normal criteria. But John, before I let you go, why don't you give me your comments on the Terrence Crawford fight, and do you think that he's a good matchup for Manny Pacquiao?
Yeah, I think at this stage of their careers, Terrence is right there. Terrence is on the mental and emotional high. He's getting better, and he's getting acclimated, and he's enjoying it, and he's feeling good. And Pacquiao, I mean, the fact is, Pacquiao's been a pro for years. He's had, I guess, over 60 pro fights. He's got a ton of money now. There's not a whole lot more, I think, that he could reasonably expect to accomplish in the game. So, every day that passes is going to improve Terrence's chances of beating him.
Most definitely. John, hey, man, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was glad to have you back on the show. Tell everybody what you have going on in social media. I know you always have some projects, some irons in it. So let our listeners know what you have going on, and give us your final thoughts for the evening.
Yes, sir. Facebook, I'm always doing my boxing thing on Facebook. John, the Iceman Scully, and the Iceman is one word. Iceman John Scully on Twitter, Iceman John Scully on Instagram, and I'm always posting pictures, and sometimes I'll do quizzes and get my followers involved and see how much they know about boxing, see how much they want to learn about boxing history, and I'm pretty regular on there, so I encourage anyone listening to join me, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Yes, hey man, we see you always imparting some knowledge or showing some pictures or something, and we always enjoy going to your website and picking up those little tidbits that you put out there. But John, thank you so much, my man. Look forward to having you on next week, and I will be in touch with you soon because I'd like to get Mr. Stark on the program. So I will be back in touch with you after the show.
All right, buddy. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. You have a good one.
Yes, sir. You too.
That was the Iceman, Mr. John Scully. Always love to start out the show with the Iceman. A lot of knowledge. John's been in the game for a long time. But right now, everyone, give me a moment here. It's time for a little straight talk with Mr. Ronnie Shields. So we're going to get Ronnie right on the line and see what's happening down there in Houston and around the Plex Gym. So it's time for a little straight talk here. Hey, my man, Ronnie, what's going on, my man, Mr. Shields?
How you doing, man?
Oh, man, it's doing good. I had a lot of action on the tube this weekend. And first of all, how are you down here in Houston, man? I hear it's kind of wet down there.
Yeah, it's really wet, but, it's been raining for 2 days now, so. But, it's not all bad. It's all good.
Yeah, it's not like it's something you guys haven't been through before, but, hey, let's get started talking about some of the action this weekend, man. And, the first thing I want to start off with was, your impression of Mr. Terrence Crawford.
As always, I thought he did a great job. The kid is a really good fighter. He proved that, he's one of the best fighters in the world, especially at 140 pounds. The kid is just so smart. When things weren't going right for him early on, right away, he made an adjustment. He turned southpaw. got a knockdown right at the end of the round. And, you know, and then they just finished him off from there. But, you know, that's real smart, man. He's just such an exceptional fighter. I don't think he get a lot of credit for him being an exceptional fighter. You know, everybody talks good about him, but, you know, the kid can really fight, and I'm glad to see him doing as well as he's doing.
Ronnie, you know, I mean, we all talk about his ability, but let's talk about, you know, some of the things that he does mentally. I mean, you know, he adjusted just like we saw him adjust in the Gamboa fight. As soon as he saw something, you know, that where he would have an advantage, he changed immediately. And like you said, in the first round, he knocked Gary John, you know, down, and he controlled him the rest of the fight. And then at the end of the fight, when it was time for him to turn back and to land his punches, he was willing to do that. Ronnie, can you teach a fighter that type of patience, or is that part of natural ability?
Well, I think it's natural ability. It's a lot of things you can't teach fighters. Fighters have to get it on their own. And, you know, and this is what you saw last night, that did this kid, you know, it's hard for you to, you know, as a trainer, to try to tell a guy, okay, you got to make adjustments right away. No, he has to know how to do that himself. He can't wait to come out of the corner for you to tell him to make those adjustments. Those adjustments have to be made by him. So, you know, it's all up to the fighter on when and how you have to make the adjustments. And, I mean, he completely, you can see he's a very smart guy. You know, you could see he studied his opponent, and, you know, he knew exactly what to do.
One thing that kind of confuses me about Terrence, and I mean, I can't use it as a knock because his record speaks for itself. But, Ronnie, the idea of two trainers, I can't quite understand that. Can you tell me, you know, is there an advantage to it, or is it that just the fighter feels more comfortable?
Well, apparently the fighter feels more comfortable. You know, the thing about it is, I mean, a lot of fighters have three and four trainers, not just one or two, you know. And, I mean, it's just like with my guys. I mean, if we have three of us, it's not just one. You only see me out front, but, you know, but we have three. And, you know, and he has two trainers, but I understand that, you know, people might get a little confused when these guys, they take two rounds each, you know. That's just, you know, that's something that probably they work on in the gym where he hears both guys. But the thing about it is both guys are saying the same thing. It's not like one guy is saying something different than another guy, because remember, these guys are in the gym together. So, you know, I don't see a problem with it. It's, you know, apparently it worked for him. And, you know, he's undefeated and he's champion of the world. So I don't see a problem.
No, I mean, like you said, you know, his record speaks for itself. His ability speaks for itself. And it seems to work for him. Now, Ronnie, there's, you know, a lot of talk about possibly him fighting Manny Pacquiao all during the fight. It was all that you heard about. But right after the fight ends, the first thing that you hear is, well, maybe Terrence Crawford might not be our first choice. Ronnie, what do you think about this matchup between Terrence Crawford and Manny Pacquiao, especially if this is going to be Pacquiao's last round?
Well, I mean, I like it because they seem like they want to fight at 140 pounds, which is great for Terrence Crawford, you know. You know, he's not a small guy. He's a big guy. But at the same time, you know, making Pacquiao come down to 140, you know, I think his all advantages goes to Terrence Crawford. But, you know, I'm not sure Pacquiao wants to go that route. But if he does, it would be a great fight. And I think right now, just looking at both guys, you know, I really couldn't pick a winner right now. You know, just as far as I'm concerned, you know, because Manny Pacquiao is still a smart fighter. you know, and I don't think he's past his prime just yet, but, you know, he's certainly going down from where he's been. But I think when you look at the fight like that, you know, him turning his top off would probably play right into Manny Pacquiao's hands. I don't think he's ever fought anyone as strong as Manny Pacquiao. And I just think, you know, Manny Pacquiao is such a smart fighter. You know, Manny know how to make adjustments too. And I think as you saw last night, you know, the guy David John, he didn't know how to make adjustments. Once Terrence Crawford turned southpaw, he was, you know, he was lost. But, you know, a guy like Manny Pacquiao even know exactly what to do in that situation. So I think, you know, a different fighter, you know, Manny Pacquiao is one of the best guys to make adjustments, and this is why he's been so successful in his career. So it won't be an easy fight for Terrence Crawford, but it won't be an easy fight for Pacquiao either. So it's a good fight. I like it, and I hope they make it.
Let's talk a minute about Derry John, Ron. That was only his second loss, but he did certainly seem to be outclassed. Ronnie, what do you see next in store for Derry John?
Well, you know, the kid got a great record. He only has two losses against two really good fighters, and Lamont Peterson and now Terrence Crawford. But, you know, I mean, he can still fight in the upper echelon because he's a good fighter. I mean, I don't think the fight was as one-sided as people was talking. You know, Derry John really got some good punches in. You know, the problem that he had was that, you know, Terrence Crawford was able to take it, and he didn't do anything to Terrence Crawford. So that's, you know, in itself was a problem for him. But, you know, you got to remember Terrence Crawford is one of the best fighters at 140 pounds. And, you know, but a guy like Derry John, you know, again, he just didn't make the necessary adjustments that he could have possibly made, you know, and he could have made some adjustments, but it's just like he didn't know what to do. So he was confused on what he was doing. So, but, you know, but you got to give all of the credit to Terrence Crawford for him being the type of fighter he is. He knows exactly what to do, and he just really just took Derry John out of his game.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, like you said, it could have been a little bit closer. Terrence did, I mean, he showed me he had a great chin. He got, I mean, Derry John did get some of those overhand rights in, and he made a great fight of it. Like you said, he just couldn't make any adjustments. But, you know, along with that, they also showed the replay of the Golovkin-Lemieux fight. Ronnie and everyone was talking about, you know, that this was this fight was a success because it netted over 150,000 pay-per-views. Ronnie, is that 150,000? Doesn't that sound kind of low for you to deem it a success?
Well, you know, I really don't know the numbers. I can only tell you what I heard about what they, you know, was talking before the fight. They said in order for them to break even and make a small profit, they had to have over 200,000 baht. Now, that was from the beginning before the fight happened. Now that the fight did 150, they said it was a success. So, go figure, you know. I think they lost money on the pay-per-view, which, you know, which was expected. You know, I think you can't expect for a guy, his first pay-per-view, for him to make a lot of money right off, especially with the two fighters that fought, you know, and that just lets you know that Triple G couldn't carry the pay-per-view by himself. He needed a partner, someone with a name to carry the pay-per-view, you know, just as well as, you know, you're going to see Cotto and Canelo, you know, one guy can't do it by himself. It's going to take both guys, and I think they're going to do really good. But in this case, you know, nobody knew, you know, Lemieux. And this is the reason why you only had 150,000 buys. And I think they lost money, but hey, you know, at least, you know, they didn't lose enough to the fact that they can't say, okay, that's it. We're not going to put him back on. I think they will put him back on because, you know, I mean, they might have at least probably broke even on it. You know, I mean, I don't think it's about mad at that. So, you know, I mean, it was good. 150,000 buys, I thought, for the first pay-per-view. The pay-per-view was really good.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of like you, you know, hearing numbers at first and then, you know, seeing what they're saying now. I'm kind of stunned, you know, how can you call it a success? But, you know, I mean, it was a success as far as the fans are concerned. But right now that that fight's over, we're hearing rumblings from the other two fighters, of course. Of course, Miguel Cotto still insists that he's not a middleweight. And now Canelo is saying that in order for him to fight Triple G, Triple G has to fight him at 155. Ronnie, aren't you tired of seeing these catch weights? I mean, you know, if you're going to fight the best, meet him at that weight class and then let's fight for the title.
Well, you know, it's always been a problem with that. You know, I think what it is that Cotto just don't want to fight Triple G. Neither does Canelo. You know, these guys realize how good Triple G really is. You know, and they just don't want no part of him. That's just the ifs, ands, and buts about it. And the next thing you're going to hear is, hey, you know, the belt don't mean anything. If the belt didn't mean anything, then why fight for it? You know, why fight less than what the belt really calls for? And I think that's been a problem for a while now. You know, I have no problem with catch weights as long as it's not for a world title. You know, when it fights for a world title, then I think you have to fight at the weight that the belt was designed to be fought at. And, you know, you always have people, you know, they're trying to throw money in the mix. But, you know, fighters have to shut it down themselves. You know, they have to say, you know what, you know, we are going to take a stand. And, you know, if his middleweight is 160, that's what we have to fight at. Light heavyweight is 175. That's what we have to fight at, you know, if we're fighting for a world title. Now, if you're not fighting for a world title, I don't think anybody cares what weight you fight at, because then it doesn't mean anything because there's no belt on the line. There's no world title on the line. So, you know, so that's the only way I would agree to a catch weight is if it's nothing on the line. But, of course, when a title is on the line, you know, you shouldn't fight at a catch weight. You should fight at the limit that the belt is for.
You know, Ronnie, I mean, that all sounds good. And, you know, I mean, back in the day when you were fighting it, I mean, you know, it was good. But how can you do that today when you have a silver champion, a diamond champion, a gold champion? You understand where I'm going with this?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, but
what is a world champion anymore?
Well, you know, and that's been a problem. See, a lot of people, everybody know what the problem is. The problem is the boxing organizations themselves. They're the problem. They create this, and you know, but they don't want to take responsibility for it. You know, if you let Miguel Cotto fight for the world title, you know, against Sergio Martinez under the middleweight, you know, weight limit, and then you continue to let him do that, then because all they want is their cut. They don't care about these fighters. You know, they don't care. You know, they don't care if you have to starve to come down and make money, because they're making money. And this is what it's all about. You know, you can't blame the fighters for it, because if the W, you know, what's going to happen in the next fight? Let's say Cotto wins against Canelo. If the WBC already said, well, Canelo don't have to, Triple G don't have to fight less than 160 pounds. So what are they going to do? Are they going to strip Miguel Cotto because he don't want to fight for that? Or they're going to try to talk Triple G into, hey, man, this is going to be the biggest payday you go ever make. So you might want to try to think about that and do it, because they're looking out for themselves. They're looking out for these fighters. They can give a damn how much a fighter weighs, because they don't care. They don't have to get in the ring. All they want is they cut up the money. They know the purse is going to be huge, and they figure, hey, we need to get a piece of this. So they're going to agree on what the hell everybody else want to agree on. So that's the way it works.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, I mean, it just seemed, you know, we talk about the good old days, but, you know, it's the chances of us getting back there seem to be slim and none. Now, another fight that's coming up here very soon, I believe November 7th, Timothy Bradley against Brandon Rios. We already got the little rumblings out. Brandon says he's going to make Timothy Bradley fight. Of course, we know Timothy is no longer with Hold Diaz. He's now with Freddie Roach. Ronnie, how do you see this fight playing out? And do you think that Brian Rios can make him?
Timothy Bradley is with Teddy Atlas.
Teddy Atlas, I'm sorry. Yeah.
You know, here's the way I feel about this. I just think that, you know, if Timothy Bradley tries to stand up and go toe-to-toe with a guy like Brandon Rios, he's going to get knocked out. No, he'll say no buts about it. You know, Timothy Bradley is a good boxer. That's what he does best. When he's on the outside using his jab, doing his combinations, and not getting in toe-to-toe exchanges, that's when he's at his best. And if he tries to change that, which, you know, I mean, you never really know how a guy's going to fight. They say they're going to do one thing to try to throw you off, two, and then do another. But I can't see him standing up and trying to put the pressure on a guy like Brandon Rios, because that's the fight Rios loves, and that's his fight. You know, Rios have problems with people with good footwork. You know, that throws him off a lot. So, you know, If Bradley thinks that he can go withstand the punch of power that Brandon Rios has and try to stand and go toe-to-toe with him, I think he's going to get knocked out, you know. But who knows what's going to happen, you know. I guess everybody got a game plan, and we never know what their plan is until the fight happens. But I do tell you this, that Timothy Bradley, you know, it's hard at the level that he's been at and for a long time to say, okay, I'm changing. What would I do? You know, there's one thing he can't change is he can't change the fact that he can't punch. And he can't punch. You know, people can say whatever they want to, but Timothy Bradley's no puncher. And if he goes in and think he's going to go toe-to-toe with a puncher like Brandon Rios, then trust me, he's going to get knocked out.
Your thoughts on him changing to Teddy, Ronnie? I mean, you know, we know Teddy as an analyst. You know, we all know Teddy's background, but you know, is maybe Timothy? He had a good record with Hoyle. I mean, why the need for change now?
Well, you know, from what I understand, you know, it's been in the works for a while now. I think his wife, who was his manager, it was up to her. She wanted to change. She didn't like the direction that Timothy was going in. But you got to understand that, you know, all the success that he's had with Joel Diaz, he's had a lot of success with him. And when you have success with someone, and to make that change is just, it's ludicrous to put it mildly, you know, because, you know, one thing that you have to understand is that you didn't get there by yourself. And so many guys, you know, they realize one thing is that, you know, okay, I'm on the end of my career. I need a jump start. I need a boost. And it's a shame that you, you know, that all the guy has done for you. All of a sudden you need a boost, but he's not the boost. You know, he knows you better than anybody, and, you know, and got you to this point. And then all of a sudden now you feel you want to make a change. But look, this is boxing, man. This isn't the first time it's happened, and it's not going to be the last time it's happened. You know, guys want to do that, and when they want to do it, hey, you know, it's up to them because it's their career, you know. And the trainer has a career also, but he has good fighters, so he's going to continue on. And, hey, you know, he you know, Joel just said, hey, there's no more coming back. And I don't blame him for it, you know, because sooner or later, you know, guys realize one thing, I made a mistake. I want to go back. And you know what? I don't blame him that he wouldn't take him back because I wouldn't either.
Well, not only that, but, I mean, at this stage of the game and considering, you know, the fights that he's been in and the wear and tear on his body, how many fights do you think Timothy has left?
Well, and that's the thing. He doesn't have a whole lot left. You know, he's an aging fighter. You know, he's been in a lot of wars. He's, you know, look, he got hurt by a guy named Jesse Vargas, who's not a puncher at all. Imagine if, you know, Brandon Rios, who is considered a puncher, hit him with any one of those shots that he got hit with against a guy like Jesse Vargas, you know? And if Rios goes in and fights the way Rios know how to fight, then, you know, he don't have to look for the shots because the shots go out and be there. But if he goes in and just look for one punch, that could be a problem for Rios because, you know, instead of looking for a lot of shots and you're going looking for just the one shot, then he could be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there, Ronnie. It should be very interesting to see where Timothy's career goes from here. Hey, I'm looking forward to that fight. Ronnie, but a fight that got postponed, Kell Brook came up with a rib injury. He was supposed to fight Diego Chavez, another tough Argentinian. But, you know, the rumor is, you know, that it's not so much the injury as the fact that Kell Brook can't make 147. What do you think about that, Ronnie?
Well, I don't believe it till I see it. You know, the thing about it is, you know, you do have to show, you know, where you have the injury. That's the good thing about being in a high profile fight, a championship fight, is that you have to prove the injury. So I'm sure they've done that. The doctors have, you know, turned everything into the organization that he's champion in. And he, you know, so I don't see why he would fake an injury, you know, just to say because I can't make the weight. You know, I don't believe it. I think he has an injury, and again, you know, he has to turn it into the boxing organization that he has the title with, and they'll take a look at it. They have doctors that they, you know, have to look at these things, and, you know, and if it's not true, then, you know, they strip him of the title. So, and I don't think he would take that kind of chance.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem highly unlikely, but, you know, that is the one thing about our business. You know, as you know, rumors always fly rampant. You know, it's if it isn't one thing, it's another. So, we do have some very good matchups coming here, Ronnie. We have Ruslan Provodnikov getting back in the ring. He's fighting over in Monte Carlo. Ronnie, what was your impression of Ruslan, and what do you think? How would you rank him among the junior welterweights?
I think he's a really, really good junior welterweight. You know, look, he's had some ups and he's had some downs. And the thing about it is, you know, he's a really strong fighter. You know, he knows how to fight. And, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, he is a guy who's, you know, he's had some bad luck in fights, man. You know, like with the fight against Bradley. I think he fought a good fight. And, but, you know, then he came back, and I don't think he was supposed to lose to Chris Algieri. I think he just had the wrong game plan going in there. I think he just thought, hey, I'm going to just hit this kid and he'll knock him out. And he found out Chris Algieri can box. So, you know, but it just, you know, he just takes him now, you know, he has a good trainer in Joel Diaz who's going to take his time. And I'm sure, you know, spend a lot of time with him and, you know, correct some of the mistakes that he makes. And I expect for him to do great. I really do. I think you're going to see a changed fighter in him because now he has somebody that's going to spend a lot of time with him, just one-on-one time, and that's going to really, you know, help him to even be a better fighter.
Yes, I like Povetnikov. I think, you know, he's provided some excellent entertainment. Like you said, you know, he's had some bad breaks, some bad game plans, but he is an entertaining fighter, and I'm sure, you know, the audience always enjoys what he puts on. November 4th in Russia, we have Povetkin against Watch, heavyweight. Ronnie, you have gotten yourself into the heavyweight business. What do you think about these two guys?
Well, Povetkin, you know, I don't know. I don't think he has such a hard fight. You know, guy got a great record, but you know, but he haven't fought anybody. So I think, like everybody else, I suspect that Povetkin will win by knockout.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And cruiserweight, Lebedev against Coyote.
Yeah. You know, I don't know, man. Latif, you know, he don't know whether he want to be a heavyweight or cruiserweight. He just keeps going up and down, man. You know, and the guy got he has longevity in the sport. You know, because you know, one moment he's a heavyweight, the next moment he's a cruiserweight. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think it's a good move for him because now. You know, another name just moved down, and that was Steve Cunningham, and I think that's great, you know, and maybe we'll see those two guys go at it before it's all over with.
Yeah, I would really like to see Steve at a cruiserweight somewhere around in there instead of getting in with all of these heavyweights. I think he's, you know, a great family man as well as a boxer, and I would like to see him get some breaks. But I don't think he'll get it in the heavyweight class. I think he needs to perhaps move down a little bit. But Ronnie,
but he's already moved down, so.
So it is definite that he's going to move back down to that weight.
Absolutely.
Now, Ronnie, on the 13th, we have your fighter, great friend of the show, Mr. Evan Rodriguez, is getting back in the ring. He's going to be fighting Michael Seals. Ronnie, how have you guys been preparing for Mr. Seals?
Well, you know, Evan is doing really good in the gym. You know, he has great sparring, and, you know, he's working hard. So, you know, we realize this is a challenge. Michael Seals is an undefeated guy, you know, and... You know, he's just one of these guys, man, that you can't take lightly. You know, he's a guy that, you know, he's been around, he's fought at cruiserweight, and he, you know, he's a smart guy, and he's a good fighter, and, you know, he wouldn't be, you know, if he's an undefeated guy. That's the thing that we have to, you know, be looking at. And, you know, Evan is preparing very well, man. He's getting in the shape that he needs to get in. And, you know, we, you know, working out game plan every day, and you know, we just, you know, he's going to be ready. You know, the only thing about it is we haven't got a contract yet, so we're just waiting. You know, I mean, that's all. That's about it.
Yeah, well, you know, that does make it a little, you know, a little tricky without the contract. But Ronnie, you know, I don't even know why these. Well, same night, one in Las Vegas, Zab Judah, Ronnie. You know, I mean, you know, we all know, you know, Zab is kind of fat, you know, fan friendly, but Ronnie, you know, are we getting a little tired? I mean, shouldn't some of these cards be going to some of the young lines that we're trying to establish?
Well, you know, fighters go always be fighters. They don't know when to call it quits. You know, this is all they know. You know, and it's just the nature of the sport. You know, guys always fight past that point all the time. You know, it's been done since the beginning. You know, and guys just don't know what to do. You know, I think the problem is, you know, we have to educate these fighters, man, on how to take care of their money, on how to conduct their business. And that's, you know, and that's always been a problem, you know. And is it a shame? Yes, it is a shame. It is a shame that guys don't deduct the business properly. And so this is why they continue to fight past that point. But, you know, look, a fighter's a fighter, man, and he's going to always feel he can beat the top guys because that's where the money is. And, of course, you know, they'll fight fights. And, you know, and there's always somebody who can beat out there, always. But, you know, but when they get to the upper echelon guys, then that's when they get knocked out and, you know, but they still don't want to give it up. You know, they want to continue with their career because the limelight, you know, they want to keep that limelight. And it's a shame, but what can you say?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as long as somebody is offering a purse, I guess that's kind of the way it goes. Another great card, well, not great card, but at least an entertaining card should be November 14th. Finally, we see Gary Russell get back in the ring. Gary, you know, other than his hiccup there, well, I don't know if you want to call it a hiccup, but with Lomachenko, Gary has proved to be a very solid fighter, champion even. But, you know, I mean, we all know he has some holes. Ronnie, what do you think about this fight against Oscar Escondo?
Well, you know, Gary Russell, man, to me, you know, I think he learned his lesson when he fought Lomachenko. You know, he realized that, hey, you know, I got to be the best Gary Russell that I can be when I step into that ring. And apparently when he fought Johnny Gonzalez, that's who he was, you know, and he realized what he had to do, you know. And I think now, you know, Gary is going to be champion for a while now, I believe. I don't think Lomachenko is going to be at 126 pounds much longer. I know Gary don't have problems with the weight, so Gary will be there for a little while. And, you know, the only thing, you know, Gary just has to keep his head, stay in great shape, you know, because he's a smart guy. He's a very good boxer. And I think Gary being champion for a little while now. I think as long as they can hold the 126 pounds, it'll be okay.
I'm glad you did bring up Lomachenko. He's back defending his title. Ronnie, you know, we talk a lot about the amateur background, and we all know that Lomachenko had an extensive one, and he's the champion and only his third professional fight. Ronnie, you know, you already mentioned him moving up in weight. What do you see as the possible ceiling for Lomachenko, And how many weight classes do you think he would possibly have a chance to dominate during his career?
Well, I think the biggest he'll probably get probably is 135 pounds. I mean, you know, he's 126 right now. You know, he'll probably can hold 130 for maybe a couple of years. Then I see him go up to lightweight. So, you know, I see him as a 3-division champion, 26, 30, and 35. I don't see him no bigger than 135. He's not that tall of a guy that can really, you know, go up to 140 pounds. So I think 135 would probably be his limit. But I can see him winning a championship in 3 divisions.
Ronnie, you know, do you think that that's due to his intense amateur background, or do you think that that has a lot to do with his natural ability? Because, I mean, this young man seems far more advanced than a lot of guys that we've seen come over. And, like we've already mentioned, he got a world title in 3 fights. But he just seems to be so far advanced and so comfortable in the ring. Ronnie, what do you kind of contribute, you know, not only his style and success to, but just, you know, the calmness with which he goes about his business?
Well, I think you got to understand the guy had 375 amateur fights, you know, at the top level, you know, and, you know, a 3-time Olympic champion, you know. The guy has really been a professional for a very long time. It's just, you know, he's just been doing it through the amateurs, you know. And he's fought everybody there is to fight, you know. And he's a natural born fighter, you know. I mean, if you add up all the fights that he's had as an amateur and as a professional, I mean, the guy has close to 400 fights. That's a lot of fights, you know. And I think you have to understand is that, you know, he's just a natural guy. He was born to do this. You know, he was. He was born to be a fighter. And it's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. You know, he's just good. You know, he's just that good. And some guys, you know, were just meant to be that way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's such a pleasure to watch in and out of the ring. And like you said, I mean, you know, it just comes so easily to him that you know, he's a joy to watch. There's no, you know, there's no real wrinkles in his game plan. He just seems to, you know, like settle in and, okay, you know, it's normal day's work. Ronnie, I'd like to talk a little bit more to you about the amateur program here in the United States. Right now, Houston, you know, the state of Texas, of course, here in California, New York, you know, I mean, you're hotbeds of boxing there. But, Ronnie, what do we have to do to repair the amateur programs, especially in these hotbeds, like I'm saying, like Texas, California, New York, you know, the programs that used to feed our Olympic programs, and we just don't seem to have it anymore. What do you suggest?
Well, it's not going to ever get fixed. It's not going to get fixed because, you know, you got too many promoters out there that turn, you know, and managers. You have too many managers. We'll put it that way first. You have too many managers out there and promoters that's getting together, and as soon as they see a good fighter, they go after and they throw money at him. And you know, you got to understand the majority of the boxers in the amateur program are poor kids. You know, they don't come from rich backgrounds. They don't, you know, school is not an option for them. You know, high school is the biggest option for them. You know, you don't have too many kids talking about going to college. What they talk about is making a lot of money as a professional boxer. And you have people in poor neighborhoods, you know, kids that can really fight, and they go and they win a national tournament. As soon as they win a national tournament, a manager sees them, they throw a few thousand dollars at them, and give them a contract and they sign it. The parents, you know, the parents really, they do. They, you know, they sign the money because $10,000 sounds like a lot of money. Maybe even a little more money, but whatever it is, you know, they run and they take that because, you know, they haven't seen that kind of money before. And so for a young child to have that kind of money in his pocket means a lot to them. You know, they think they're rich and they don't realize what they've done, that, you know, that they can make a lot more money if they were to, say, go to the Olympics and perhaps win a gold medal, you know. And but people talk them out of it. I hear people talking all the time. They say, oh, man, you're going to get to that level. And then all of a sudden, they're going to steal a fight from you. You know, you might as well just take this money, and you, at least you got the money now. You know, not realizing that as a professional, the same thing can happen to you. But, you know, they feel like they're getting paid. And it's a shame, but that's the way we are. You know, that's the way we are. You know, we put money above everything. You know, it's not about, you know, it's not about our country anymore. It's about ourselves. And so, you know, so that's why we're not going to have the best team anymore, you know, because we've taken that away, you know, by greed.
Now, you know, I remember back in the day when, you know, we used to watch the Pan Am games and, you know, the pre-Olympic trials and that, when, you know, we used to have sponsors like, you know, Nike, you know, guys would have on Nike gear, or they would have on Reebok shoes or you know, trousers. But we seem to be losing sponsors, Ronnie. Why are we losing sponsors now when, for all intents and purposes, we're back with free TV. Boxing is almost at its height within the last 5 to 10 years as far as public view. So why are we seeing more sponsors invest in more fighters like we used to?
You know, the amateur level, you know, they still have sponsors. They have a lot of sponsors. Nike is a huge sponsor of the USA Amateur Association. So they are. Nike is still there. And so our other sponsors are there. But the problem is the money doesn't go to the kids. The money goes to the amateur program. It doesn't go to the kids. The kids have to wear Nike. They have to wear, you know, the uniforms. They have to, you know, that's all they get. They get uniforms. They get the shoes, the cup, the gloves, you know, they get the sweatsuits, they get the trunks, you know, they get all of that stuff. But the problem is, you know, the United States Boxing Association is what gets the money. And so it's not legal to give the athletes money. So they can't accept money. Because if they accept money, then they are considered a professional. Now, what they do, I mean, they give them a stipend. They're allowed to give them a stipend. And I know the stipend used to be you couldn't get no more than $500 a month. For a lot of kids, that's nothing, you know, when it's millions of dollars being thrown out there, but they can't get a part of it, you know. So this is why our amateur program would never be up to par like all these other different countries. All these other different countries, they get their fighters houses, they get them cars, they give them a lot of money to keep them amateur. But here in the United States, we don't do that. So this is why we are going to fall way behind in the amateur stuff. We're going to fall way behind because we don't do that, because we feel that amateur fighters shouldn't be getting paid.
You know, speaking of the amateur programs, you know, let's talk a little bit about the Cuban amateur program. We're opening up relationships again with Cuba, you know, on the diplomatic side. Why do you expect to see more Cuban fighters, possibly an influx of Cuban fighters into the American boxing game once we fully open up diplomatic relations with Cuba again?
Absolutely not. I think we're opening up. Our relationship is opening up with Cuba, but, you know, nothing is changing as far as that's concerned. I think people are getting it mixed up. They're thinking that, you know, now that, you know, because we open up a relationship again with Cuba, that they're going to just let the guys just go anywhere they want to and come here and go back. No, it don't work that way. You know, they still the same country. It's just, I think our trade embargo is opening up. We open up to that. They're letting people travel to Cuba. You know, Floyd Mayweather went to Cuba a couple of weeks ago. You know, he was able to go in and go to Cuba. You know, so they're opening up that as far as, you know, Cuba, you know, having people to travel there, like you can travel almost anywhere else. Yeah, that's opening up. But they, you know, they athletes and stuff still can't go where they want to go. They can't come and say they come here to visit, and then what happens? They don't go back. They're not going to agree to nothing like that, you know. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it would be nice, you know, I guess in the utopian world, you know, where, you know, we open up relationships and things like that happen. I mean, you know, seeing all the Eastern Bloc countries come over and that are now champions, you know, it would just... I would love to see the Cubans come over and be integrated into our program, but, you know, like you said, I mean, you know, that may or may not happen, but that's a whole different ball of wax there. Ronnie, but, you know a lot of the gentlemen that we have associated with our amateur program. Ronnie, you know, how, as a trainer and a coach, how frustrating is it to see, you know, a lot of this young talent not just go to waste, but then, you know, simply be turned into, like you say, you know, kind of commercial servitude?
Well, you know, it's hard to watch. It's hard to watch that, you know, some of these kids, man, they could really have a good experience, you know. And I remember when I was an amateur fighter, I traveled all over the world, you know. And for me, I would have never got that opportunity if it wasn't for amateur boxing. You know, that was something that, you know, that I've always wanted to do was travel to experience different places, man, and, you know, meet different people and see what, you know, see what how they live and compared to what we live in this way. I mean, we're all human beings, but, you know, life is different in every place. And, you know, for me, man, it was just such a great experience, man. And if I could have stayed amateur for the rest of my life, I probably would have if I could have done, just continued to do that, you know. But back then, you know, we had perhaps the best amateur program going back then. And it really, you know, it was really great because, you know, we did this for our country. We didn't do it, you know, for our city, for our state. We did it for our country. And that's been lost now. That's not there anymore. People don't care about the country anymore. People, you know, it's all about self now, you know, and that's what it's all about. And people, you know, people, you know, have become greedy. People have become to the point to where, you know, they just don't care anymore. You know, it just doesn't make a difference anymore. You know, back then, you know, again, I can only speak for my era, you know, but back then, you know, all the guys, man, they, you know, when we fought against other countries, you know, we took pride in that, you know. It was about pride. It was about saying, hey, man, I'm representing the United States of America. And, you know, and other countries did the same, you know, because, you know, we always talk to the other you know, to the opponents, and always said the same thing. You know, we're doing this for our country because we want to be the best for our country, you know. And now it's so much politics, you know, so much politics is involved in everything now. And unfortunately, it has spread it down to the amateur sports. And, you know, now this is why we don't have the best teams anymore, you know. And, I mean, all you got to do is go back. Just go back a while and look at the basketball. Basketball meant so much to this country that, and then after a while, what happened? You know, here's what happened. Well, what happened was all of those kids start turning, you know, they start trying to, you know, they gave up their scholarships basically and say, you know, I'm turning professional. But now you can't do that anymore. You know, now they got rules in place now. You have to have so many college hours now before you can apply for the NBA. So now, you know, at least in basketball, what we've done, look what we've done now. We've let the professional athletes play in Olympic competition, Pan Am games, and stuff like that, and all international things. We've said, okay, you know, all these other countries are doing it, so now you know what? We're going to do it. You know, and at first, we were very reluctant to do it because we didn't want to be like other countries. But when other countries start winning all these gold medals, then all of a sudden, you know, basketball say, you know what? No, we can't let that happen. So we start doing the same thing. And that's what happened. So that's, you know, that's it in a nutshell. Now it's become about money. And when you put money involved in amateur stuff, all that can lose is the poor kids.
Right, you know, while we're talking about it, you know, I think another thing that kind of goes either unnoticed or you know, kind of falls by the wayside is also the demise of our women's boxing and the female programs. Ronnie, other than Clarissa Shields, I don't think you could probably name two other female boxers. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know of anybody else. Besides Clarissa, she's the only one I do know her. I know the other girl. She's from Houston. She's from here. Because the only reason I know her is because she lives here, and she's between here and California now, between here and San Francisco. And she's on commercials and stuff like that. But the only reason I know her is because she's come to train at Plex before. And, you know, she went to the Pan Am Games. She went to the Olympics before. They're doing it. And, you know, so that's the only reason I know about her.
I mean, you'd think, you know, I mean, you know, with all the publicity that Ronda Rousey gets and you know, I mean, the UFC, I mean, you'd think some of that would have a trickle-down effect. But, Ronnie, how much danger are we in of losing the women's program, period?
Well, I mean, you know, we definitely will lose the women's program. I mean, they've already cut the women's program down to so many weight classes now. You know, they don't have as many weight classes as the men. You know, they've already cut them down. It's only maybe like five or six weight classes that the women can compete in now. So, you know, it's, you know, they making it hard for these women to even compete in Olympics as far as boxing is concerned, because they've cut the weight classes so much. You know, now you know, I mean, it's crazy. I don't think they have about maybe six weight classes for women, period.
Yeah, you know, it's really a shame. We do have some talent there, too. But, Ronnie, hey, man, it's always good to share this hour with you. Love the straight talk. Give us your final thoughts for the evening and tell us anything that any fighters or anything that you might have coming up for Plex.
Yes, our next fight is going to be November 13th. Aaron Rodriguez versus And we just called it. We're having Rodriguez on Spike TV. Put it that way. November 13th.
Yeah, I was just looking for the gentleman's name that he was fighting, but I lost the page. But hey, Ronnie, as always, my man, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate having you, and we look forward to having Edwin on the show before he gets in the ring. And as always, my man, we thank you so much. You have a great night.
You too. Thanks.
Well, everyone, another show has passed. That was Ronnie Shields with a little straight talk. Also, we had our usual session with Iceman John Scully. Look forward to talking to you next Sunday on the Weekend Wrap. And don't forget to catch us Tuesday on Pugilist Corner. So, have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next week.